If you could choose one food to eat for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Cheese, maybe?
Oh, very good choice. All right. I'll stop grilling you on the lightning round. All right. As we wrap up, I wanted to see if you have any advice that you'd like to pass on to the next generation of STEM professionals, or if there's any specific audience you'd like to address.
Well, you know, like I said, I was volunteering for a few years with Immigrating Women in Science program, the IWIS from SQUIST. That was so much eye-opening for me.
Mm-hmm.
From that experience, my observation is that sometimes female professionals with STEM backgrounds may not find how much opportunities Canada can offer them, just because possibly there hasn't been equal number of opportunities available before their immigration to them.
Mm.
And definitely my recommendation is, soon after you arrive in Canada, start just attending some of the events like what SQUIST holds on a very regular basis. For sure, I understand, and I have been an introvert and a very shy woman at my own time. For sure, attending the very first event or the first few events are very difficult. You wouldn't be feeling very happy because you don't know anyone. You don't want to go to and talk to anyone that not necessarily looks at you at that moment. But just keeping persistence and kind of just repeating that for the next time and possibly the next time helps you find some similar faces or familiar faces, not similar, sorry. Yeah, familiar faces where you can find talking to more comfortable, or kind of like you can overcome that initial fear. From there, you definitely have started opening ways for you, opening doors for yourself, just like most of us have been doing. And don't be afraid of volunteering. Volunteering is a very valuable component in Canada that I had never found or never knew about, as well as the other component is looking for a mentor. There are so many mentorship programs here in BC. I have seen in various levels, regardless of whether your background is a STEM or not, whether you're a woman or not, you know, in all levels, you can find great mentors and great mentorship programs, short term, long term, formalized or in a fixed format rather than as compared to free format of just meeting and chatting. I guarantee you would so benefit from that you would never, ever forget.
Absolutely. Well, very, very wise words. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, Sheila.
Oh, my pleasure, Danielle. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Is there anywhere that people can connect with you online?
Sure. Well, I'm a very kind of happy and active LinkedIn user, and I definitely recommend LinkedIn to all STEM professionals for their own benefit, as well as for finding people like me if they want to. And I would be definitely happy to share hints, share my experience, and kind of if there's a question that I wouldn't know the answer, I would be happy at least to find someone that I believe knows the answer.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to keep up with all the latest news on women in STEM, you can visit us online at wwest.ca. There, you can subscribe to our bi-weekly newsletter, connect with us on social media, and more. From everyone at West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology, thanks for listening.
Join Talon Books on Thursday, October 5th at 7:30 p.m. for the Fall Poetry Launch at the Pyatt Hall in downtown Vancouver. Help us celebrate these new works from Andrea Bennett, M.A.C. Ferrant, Samantha Nock, and Nikki Reimer. It promises to be a fantastic evening, and the Fall 2023 launch will be hosted by writer and fellow Talonite Aaron Kirsch. Admission is free. Drinks and snacks will be served. Doors open at 7 o'clock, with readings beginning at 7:30 p.m. Hosted at the Pyatt Hall on 843 Seymour Street in Vancouver.
On the next Alternative Radio, hear Chalmers Johnson on Blowback, the Consequences of U.S. Foreign Policy. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday afternoons at 4, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
This is The Best of the West, inspiring women with real stories, hosted by West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
Hello and welcome to The Best of the West, UConn edition. I'm your host, Allison, and today we're talking with Kirsten Hogan. Kirsten has over 15 years of experience in environmental engineering with a focus on contaminated sites management and remediation, and greenhouse gas emissions quantification and management. Kirsten is a professional engineer registered in the Yukon and Alberta. She has undergraduate and graduate degrees in environmental engineering from the University of Guelph and has been a practicing professional engineer in the Yukon since 2008. Kirsten enjoys an active life in Whitehorse with her husband and three children. Thanks for being with us today, Kirsten.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me.
So how long have you been in the Yukon?
Well, we moved back as a family in 2008. Before that, I was here with my family in the 90s, and I graduated from FH Collins.
So what brought your family to the north in the first place?
At the time when I was in high school and we moved here, it was a job opportunity for my parents, and we were people that moved here for a few years and never left. My parents are still here, and my sister is here as well, so it really is our home.
Great. And now you're an environmental engineer. What led you into this field?
Well, I actually started off my undergraduate degree in chemistry. I just really enjoyed science in high school, and I had a great chemistry teacher that I found really inspiring. And so I started off in chemistry and enjoyed that until I realized that a lot of the career opportunities were lab-based, and I didn't think I wanted to be in a lab for a long period of time. So I switched to engineering after my first year of university, and it was a great combination of all of the things that I really enjoyed. And at the University of Guelph, it was a small engineering class. I had some really great classmates and friends, and the work was exciting and interesting.
So you graduated in the Yukon and you went to the University of Guelph?
Yes, I did.
What made you make that move?
Well, graduating in the Yukon, most people make the decision to go to UBC or UVic, and I wanted to go somewhere else. I had lived in Alberta for a while, so I kind of ruled out the western part of the country and decided to apply in Ontario. And I really wanted to go to a university with stone buildings and maple trees and things like that, and Guelph fit the bill. And I have family in Ontario too, so it was it made an easier transition.
Yeah, it's a beautiful university, and it has a kind of a small town feel.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a smaller town feel than going to some of the big schools.
Now part of your focus is on remediation. How do you think UConn fares when it comes to remediation activity?
Oh, that's a great question. The Yukon is a bit of a different place to practice environmental engineering because a lot of the environmental liability falls to the territorial government now. In other places, private companies need to clean up messes that they make. But here, a lot of the liability or the contamination that we're dealing with is from the era of construction of the Alaska Highway, or from before the Yukon became the Yukon. So it really is primarily driven by the government and by their budget and by the political will to clean sites up. So it's a bit different than working for private industry in other places. But I think that we do a good job of it. And I've been working with the Yukon Department of Environment to get really a sense of what is out there that needs cleaned up and to help them prioritize and make plans for the future. So I like that part of it.
Yeah, it's definitely really important work. And now there's renewed interest in mining in Yukon, and with the historical significance of the industry and the territory, how have remediation methods evolved?
Well, there's a lot of emphasis now on new technologies in remediation, and it can be, there's usually a lot of hope attached to each new technology. But one thing that I have found over time is that really, when a site has been contaminated over a long period of time, it also takes a long period of time to clean it up. And there aren't really any shortcuts. I think we're getting much better at monitoring remediation and at determining what contaminants really are a risk to human health or to the environment. But there hasn't been a huge change in the length of time it takes to clean something up. So that's something I think we need to keep in mind when we're considering any large project that has the potential to contaminate the environment, that there aren't really any short answers to clean up.
Are there any new reclamation methods that you have seen that you think have potential in Yukon or that you're excited about in particular?
Yeah, there's one that's going to be used at the Marwell Tar Pit, which I'm excited to see the results of. So it involves excavating soil that's contaminated with hydrocarbons and heating it and capturing the gases that come off and using both heat and biodegradation to treat the hydrocarbons in the soil to clean it up. So that's something that, as far as I know, has not really been tried widely across the north. It would solve a few of our problems that we have with bioremediation because we don't have a long season where that works. So I'm excited to see what comes from that.
Well, it sounds like your work gets to have a really positive impact on, you know, people's everyday lives and maybe in ways that they aren't aware of. Is there anything in particular about working in the north that you'd like to share with people?
Well, I think one of the challenges of working in the north is that we're not always close to the resources that we want to use. And one thing that I try to encourage clients to consider and regulators, the people who make decisions about what we need to clean up, one of the things I try to bring into that conversation is how much harm are we doing by trying to reclaim something in a really remote location? So, I mean, a good example is remote drilling exploration wells in the Yukon that might have contamination associated with them. We can go in and clean that up using some sort of traditional methods, but a lot of the time that involves hauling large volumes of contaminated material out of that remote site or even out of the territory. So we end up with a very disruptive process that has a huge carbon footprint to clean up what might be a small volume of contamination in terms of that local environment. So I think it's definitely interesting and challenging working in the north because we have to think about the whole life cycle of a remediation project as well and look at what the environmental impact of doing that work is compared to leaving things in place or not. Not contaminating them in the first place would be the great option.
Yeah, it sounds like we're in need of a made in Yukon solution for this northern problem. Do you get the opportunity to work as part of a team?
That I do, but not as often as I would like. Now that I have my own company, it's a bit different in that I don't have people that I collaborate with every day. And I'm often working on things alone and then collaborating with clients or other professionals. So I do love those opportunities when they come along to work as part of a team. And I was part of a consulting team that was working on a remediation project in Old Crow this past year. And it was great. I learned a lot. And it was really nice to have other experts in other areas of remediation to learn from and to collaborate with. Makes the job fun.
There must be a lot of interaction with regulators and clients and contractors.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah. Part of any project manager's job, I think, is, you know, daily interactions with lots of people on the project team.
For sure. So having your bachelor's and master's in environmental engineering, what was your university experience like in general?
Well, the University of Guelph, especially the School of Engineering, is a pretty small school. My graduating class was less than 100 students across four different disciplines of engineering. So there was a lot of working together. It was a really design-focused degree. So we did a lot of projects together. We got out and talked to people in industry together. And there was a real sense of community in university that I really enjoyed. We've been back to that campus just once since we graduated. My husband graduated from there too. And it's a bit bigger now, but still the same feeling. It was a great place to go to school.
And your husband's an engineer as well?
Yeah, he is. Same thing. He's an environmental engineer.
Great. Have you faced any barriers or challenges in your educational or professional career?
Well, I think when I first started out working, I moved to Calgary and took a job with a consulting firm there. And a lot of the work that they did was focused on cleaning up gasoline, like gas station sites. And it kind of transitioned into upstream oil and gas while I was there. But one of the things that I didn't really see as a barrier at the time is that there just weren't a lot of other women. Especially not other women in senior positions. So there, I was regularly in environments where I was either the only woman or I was the only woman in a professional position. And so I think that was difficult because it made it difficult to see where my career could go, knowing that I wasn't the same as the other people in the room.
Yeah, representation and role models are so important. And now you're the new chair of UConn 30 by 30, which is a chapter of an initiative of Engineers Canada with the goal to raise the number of newly licensed professional engineers to 30% by 2030. What do you think is the impact of raising the number of women in engineering?
Well, I think that just raising the number of women in engineering all on its own will encourage other young women to both become engineers and to continue on in the profession as engineers, because there will be lots of role models for them to look at, lots of support and a sense of community that was certainly missing for me when I started out. I think that's, for me, the impact of that 30 by 30 committee has been huge in my life because it has connected me with a community that I wasn't connected with before, and it has made a big difference to how I feel about the engineering profession and my own career. And really, yeah, I think that everybody who wants to be an engineer deserves that kind of support.
What kind of initiatives is the 30 by 30 group carrying out?
Well, we have a really enthusiastic and dedicated group of people that have joined the 30 by 30 committee. So we have two different tracks right now. We have an outreach or an attraction working group that's focused on changing the way people view engineering and explaining engineering as a career to young women and girls, and trying to get more kids in general involved in the practice of engineering in school, and hoping to encourage people to join the profession. And then we have a retention working group that's focused on women who are professional engineers or who are on track to become professional engineers, working on finding out what they need for support to make their professional lives better. And so we really are just at the beginning, I think, of a lot of really exciting initiatives.
Great. And it's great to hear that it has had a positive impact already on your career, and I assume on many others. So there are low numbers of women entering engineering, and those numbers have not risen substantially over the past few decades. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a combination of things. I think that even though we do a good job generally of attracting young women into engineering at the university level, I don't think we do a good job of preparing people in general, and women especially, for entering the workforce. Engineering is often looked at as not a helping profession, right? It's looked at as a very technical profession. When people think about engineering, they often think about bridges or civil engineering or structural design. And to me, engineering really is a way of thinking about the world. And what we have to offer as engineers is a perspective and a way of solving problems that other people don't have. I think a lot of people have that skill, but are not necessarily translating that into professional engineering careers. And we really need those people. You know, we need those people to make the world a better place. And I think if we do a better job of explaining or showing to people coming into university that becoming an engineer is a way to help people and to use your imagination and your creativity to solve the problems of the future, that we'll do a better job of getting people into engineering or into any of the science professions, really.
Well, I'm biased, but I also think engineering is a great career, and I think everyone should consider it, definitely. After several years in engineering consulting, you started your own engineering consulting firm, Aperture Consulting, Inc. What made you decide to start your own business?
Well, it was a little bit of what we talked about before, where in the consulting firm that I was at, I didn't really see any senior role models that had a career that I wanted. So I did have one mentor that I really appreciated, and she was a wonderful person for me at that time in my life to help me along. But she, in the later stages of her career, was still working, you know, 70 to 80 hours a week. She had a family that she regretted not seeing, but that was the level of commitment that she had to demonstrate to that company in order to be in a senior position. And I just didn't want that for myself. I knew that I wanted to have a more balanced lifestyle. So starting my own firm was a way to control the time commitment that I had and a way to cut the overhead that goes with any large firm and earn that money directly instead of paying for office space and things like that. So that was a really big step, and it wasn't a long ways into my career. I think I had been working just long enough to get my PEng. I'd been working for about 4 years. So it was a big jump, but a good one. And I did have another friend who had his own business that talked me through kind of some of the logistics of it, like who to call for an accountant and how to register a business and all of those things that are not difficult but seem overwhelming at the outset.
Yeah, for sure. That was a really brave thing for you to do. And just so our listeners know, there are a lot of resources for people who want to start businesses now. There's been a big push recently. So Canada Business Network would be one place to go and ask for that kind of advice if you aren't so lucky to have a friend who's a business owner. So you mentioned that having your own company was able to improve your work-life balance. Could you speak to that?
Sure. Well, we have three children now, and we've been working as independent consultants for 10 years. And so through that time, you know, giving up a salaried position meant giving up maternity leave benefits and things like that. But it also meant that I could work as much or as little as I felt capable of as I was having kids and raising a family. I've been really, really lucky to have a partner in life that supports that and that wants to work that way too. So we trade off working and parenting. I think we make a good team in both. And it has allowed us to do things like work from other places in the world for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. We've gotten really good at working remotely. It's amazing once you're a flight away from your client how little they actually need a face-to-face meeting. People are very satisfied with teleconferences and communicating over email, and I find that we are able to get a lot of work done in a short amount of time from wherever we want to be. It's great.
That sounds amazing. That's a benefit I hadn't even thought of. But you choose to stay in Whitehorse, so you must love it.
We do, yeah. Whitehorse, I think, is going to be our base for a long time to come. I love the opportunities that it gives ourselves and our kids, the lifestyle and the ability to be outside and to enjoy where we live. And it's a great base to travel from when we do want to see other parts of the world.
Yeah, can't be beat. So to wrap up, is there any advice that you would give to anyone thinking of entering a STEM field?
Yes, I think that for anyone thinking of entering a STEM field, I think it's really important to try to find somebody to talk to about it. Because the experience of being in university or being in training and being in the workforce is really different. And I think it's important to know a little bit about what your career might look like before you make that decision. I think that all STEM fields have rewarding and wonderful careers ahead of them, but it can be frustrating if it's not what you thought it was going to be. So I would advise finding somebody to talk to, figuring out what they do day to day and what that looks like, because it is different than you expect, I think, coming out of school.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I know Engineers UConn 30 by 30 has a webpage, and I believe your contact information is on it. So
it is.
Our listeners could reach out to you if they're interested in finding out more about engineering or environmental engineering specifically.
Definitely. I'd love to hear from some of the listeners.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being with us today, Kirsten.
Thank you very much, Allison.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to keep up with all the latest news on women in STEM, you can visit us online at wwest.ca. There, you can subscribe to our bi-weekly newsletter, connect with us on social media, and more. from everyone at West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology, thanks for listening.